This is Blue July, and you're listening to the Be Someone podcast. Lights looking bright, the H got the vibe. She's my name on the signs, it's my time to shine. When I was cruising 45 and it crossed my mind that I shine like the sun and that I'll be someone.
Lights, camera, session, use the flow molasses. Blue July, my fashion, future bright and glasses. Applause from the masses.
This is the Be Someone podcast.
Hi guys, I need you to do me a favor. When you catch a free second, please go to my website, coachortiz.com. And on my website, you'll be able to locate all my podcast, past and present. And then you'll also be able to see my line of children's books that I've been recently releasing. You know, so do me a favor, go to coachortiz.com and check them out. You take care, have a blessed day, and be that someone. Hey, hello everyone. This is the Coach Chris Ortiz at the Be Someone podcast, and today's special guest is none other than Daniel Ortiz, my cousin. How you doing, Daniel?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing good, man. It's been a minute since I've seen you, man. Noticed some things different about you, man. Looks like you got your arm all inked up. Tell me a little bit about them tattoos.
I got a lighthouse all the way at the very top of my arm with the compass. It don't really have a meaning.
It just looks good.
Yeah, I just saw the lighthouse and I liked it and I wanted it. And then I was just trying to continue like a sea theme with the Poseidon and the anchor. And then on the inner bicep, it just says I can do all things. And gonna finish it up soon, so.
All right, what do you want to fill that empty space with?
I'm probably going to get a rose with a rosary coming out of it. So Grandma Fella used to pray with the rosary all the time.
Yeah, she
so
did.
So it kind of symbolizes her. So, and then probably get trust the process and the rest, because I feel like that's just something that I live by now, so.
All right, man. Good, man. It's good to have that inspirational, motivational stuff on you.
Yeah.
You mentioned Grandma Ophelia, man. That's a blast from the past. What do you remember from Grandma?
The food?
What in particular, man? Let's see if we're on the same page, because there's something in the back of my mind, and I want to see if we're on the same thing.
I'm just used to, like, the Milaneses and, like, macaroni. That's pretty much what I ate, though, because I was real picky, and the calabaza.
Dang, man. Grandma must have loved you, man. I never got none of that. What I remembered was always the brown rice or the orange rice that we always had.
Oh, that too, yeah.
Throw some peas in there and some bistec, the steak, man. Like, that's good, man. It's good to hear Grandma's name again. All right, man. Let's get it going. So where did you grow up, man, and what was it like?
So I was born and raised in Houston. Lived in Northcliff till I was like 4 or 5, maybe. I don't remember too much, but then we moved in across the street. It really was like a normal life. Nothing, you know, I'm not saying I had struggle or anything, but, you know, it was just a regular life, just going through school, had an older brother, and just check your average life. Nothing really special about mine.
I totally forgot that you lived in the house in Northcliff, man. Yeah. I always thought that you lived over here in Fountainhead.
No.
All right, man. Well, tell me a little bit about your folks, man. Tell me about your dad first.
He's your dad's brother.
Right.
So I don't think people know, like, that we're related or cousins. He's just a real neat freak, clean guy.
That's what we were talking about earlier, man.
Yeah.
That dude's steady cleaning.
Yeah, I won't say strict, but, you know, he just wants the best for anybody. He's very nice, helpful. You know, he'll give you arm and a leg. You tell him you're not hungry, he'll probably ask you like 10 more times, are you hungry? He'll get you something even if you're not hungry. That's just the way he is, and I think he gets it from like Dialicha and stuff, because they're the same way.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they'll ask you like, are you hungry, like 10 times.
Yeah, man.
Even though you said no, so.
I always told my wife, Whitney, that if I lived with Thielicha, that I'd probably be like 300 pounds.
Oh,
always
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
So your dad's the same way, huh?
Yeah, they're the same way.
What about your mom? Tell me a little bit about your mom.
She's really just a hardworking woman. She's always working. I think I kind of get the hard work trait from her, I guess you could say. And yeah, she's just a strong woman, real independent, and just hardworking. That's really about it.
Well, good. That's
it's a good trait to inherit from your mother. Tell me a little bit about your siblings, man. Your brother, Eric.
Eric, I think he's 33 now. Has his own kid.
He's an old man. You don't know exactly how old he is, but he's old.
Yeah, he's a firefighter. Works for HFD and Northwest. Kind of. Me and him never really were like close in a way, I guess you could say, but it was never like we like didn't like each other. It just we didn't have that normal brother, I guess you can say, relationship.
Well, there's a big age difference between y'all.
Yeah, so he's, I think it's like 11 or 10 years.
Yeah, man, that's just y'all are two different, you know, points in life.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, your regular brothers are within the same age group and always doing stuff together, so.
Well, I do know that, you know, at one point in your life, you did, you know, entertain the idea of going into the fire department also. So obviously, you know, he had a positive impact on you.
Yeah, that's kind of where I seen him doing it and it kind of just influenced me. And I was like, you know what, let me just try and see how I like it, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do at the time, because I didn't want to go to college, even though I got accepted to Sam Houston where I wanted to go. But at the end of the day, school just wasn't for me.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But I'm a teacher, and I'll be the first one to tell you that going to college is not for everyone. If it doesn't float your boat, you know, there's a number of different routes one can take, man. So for anyone that's out there listening, you are not a failure, or there's nothing wrong with you if you don't think that college is the route for you. There's a number of other different routes that one can explore. What we're going to do now is I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the accident. I want you to take us back to the events of that evening, you know, starting from, you know, you pulling over and helping.
So I went to my friend's house probably about like 10, 11. We weren't drinking or nothing. We were just kind of just hanging out. And there's about five of us. We ended up leaving about like 1:30 in the morning. And like everybody normally does, they go to Whataburger, get something to eat pretty late. So we went to Whataburger.
By Willowbrook?
No, we were actually down there by Jones.
Okay.
Jones in 1960. We ate there.
Oh, further out then.
Well, because he lives over there off Jones. So we were over there and started coming back towards the house about like 3 in the morning. 1960 at the 249 passing Willowbrook. And I just remember seeing like a car like spun out, missing like the driver's side tire, I think I remember. So I pulled over. Kind of like right there where, I don't know if you know where Blue Water Seafood is.
I know exactly where that's
between
at.
Like there and IHOP. And I pulled over right there to help the lady. And somebody pulled over behind me, but I think they moved. And they went and made a U-turn and came back around. And after I just got out, you know, I made sure everything was all right, I walked back to my car, sat down. And that's when I just woke up in the hospital the next morning trying to figure out what happened.
So what is the first thing, or what's the last thing that you remember prior to that impact?
Honestly, probably just like sitting down in my car. I remember just like sitting down in my car and just going to like close my door. And after that, that's the last thing I can remember.
Good Lord, man. And how long was it until you woke up? Was it a day? Was it 2 days? Was it just hours?
I woke up that next morning in ICU. I think it was like about 11 or 12. I'm not too sure the time. But I woke up and I opened my eyes and I was like, what the hell happened? And I just seen my mom and dad in there looking. And I was like, what's going on? And at the time, I didn't try to like move my arms or move my legs because I had wires all on me. So I just didn't think about moving around. I was just confused at what happened until my mom had told me that I was in a car accident. So I was confused.
What was the extent of your injuries?
It was C5, C6 spinal cord injury, incomplete. So it basically means that there's so many different levels of the spinal cord, which is like your cervical, your thoracic, your lumbar, and your sacrum. And your cervical is in your neck, which the higher it is, the worse, like the less function you're going to have. And if the lower it is, like if it's in the thoracic or lumbar, you're going to have more function. So I basically, for me, I have... They call it trace triceps, which means you have some, but it's real weak. You have biceps. You have very like limited finger movement. So I can't like make a grip or like squeeze my, make a fist or anything. and basically I'm paralyzed from like the nipple line of the chest down. And that's pretty much like the C5, C6 style. And it's called quadriplegic. A para, people get confused because they don't know, but a para is like somebody that's paralyzed like on the lower level, like a thoracic lumbar, and they have full use of their upper body.
Yeah.
All their core muscles, everything. But for me, like, I don't have any core muscles or anything like that. So you're considered a quad, which is a quad. We call it, that's what we call each other, quads. But the medical term is quadriplegic.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're pretty well versed in it. I imagine you've heard.
Yeah.
Heard more than your fair share.
Yeah, I do a lot of research too when I'm bored.
What was the first thing that went through your mind upon waking up?
Really, like, what happened? Like, how did I get in a car accident? Like, because I don't remember just like getting hit. Like, I don't remember none of that. I just remember just sitting in my car and waking up in the hospital. So I was just curious to what happened, and like how it happened.
Like, when does it hit you that you've lost usage of, you know, your lower limbs and some of your extremities?
I think it hit me because my mom told me that I was paralyzed. Oh, because I tried to move my legs, and I was like, what? Like, all right, something's not right here. And it still didn't, like, click to me yet. And then she told me, like, that I'm paralyzed or whatever. So that's when it kind of hit me, like, okay. Something, like, this is serious. And from there on, it was just kind of like real tough just being in the hospital so long.
And how old were you when this happened?
I think I just turned 18, because it happened August of 2015. So I think I just turned 18. And yeah, so when I was 18, sounds about right, yeah.
Good Lord, that's the prime of your life, man. Let me ask you this, you know, being 18, what was it like coming to grips with these new limitations? Because I imagine it wasn't something that, you know, just hit you like a ton of bricks. I'm sure it was like a slow burn.
Yeah, no, it was tough just because I felt like I've had finally found, like, what I wanted to do with my life, because I was in the fire academy. Everything was kind of just coming together for me. And to kind of just have it all taken away from you so fast, it kind of sucks, because I felt like, too, like, I was getting into those years where I'm going to, like, all the years I missed out, like, I'm going out with my friends, and not saying that I needed to go out, like, to the Midtown bar and stuff, but I just didn't really get to experience none of that stuff, you know, just to go out and have that nightlife, because it was just too hard for me at the time.
It is a part of the young person experience.
I mean.
You didn't have to do it every night, but you did deserve to go to T-Town at least one time.
Yeah, and then you see your friends out there partying, and, you know, you're just kind of stuck watching it on Snapchat on your phone. So I had to, like, delete my Snapchat, and I just hated seeing stuff like that.
Man, so. I know that you were pretty damn close to starting to school us in basketball, too. You were coming through the gym, and...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
You had a pretty good game on you for a soccer player, man.
Yeah.
Did you enter a depressive cycle? You know, did you start questioning, you know, your faith in your life at any point?
I did. I think, like, the first 6 months are, like, the toughest. Because you just question. You're always questioning, like, why me? Like, what did I do? Like, I'm not a bad kid. Like, I don't deserve this. And at the time, you know, I just kept telling myself in my head, like, I wish I was dead. Like, I don't want to go through this. I'm just better off dead. And I kind of had, like, that same... like, I don't say suicidal, but I just kept wishing I was dead for, like, the first, like, 6 months. And then you kind of, like, come to grips with it, and it's like you either going to let it break you, or, you know, you can do your best to put yourself in a better situation.
Was there, like, a moment where you went from that dark side and kind of more into the light? And if so, like, what was it?
I think it's just, like, when I started rehabbing and I started therapy and just getting back in there and just doing exercises and kind of, like, seeing some progression. It's very slow progression, just with a whole spinal cord injury in general, it's very slow. But I was just, like, started seeing other injuries, looking them up on the internet, and it takes time. But the moment that you just kind of, like, let your body kind of just stop moving it and stop working out, it kind of just starts just dying in a way that I can describe it. So I just kept trying to be active, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna do my best. And you know, 5 years later, and I'm here. So,
was there anyone in particular that you looked towards as a source of inspiration? Anyone that had walked in your same shoes that you know you saw and said, "Man, if he can do it, I can do it," or "If she can do it, I can do it."
Yeah, I seen a lot of other patients at the hospital, similar injuries to mine, but it's crazy that even though like they might be a C5, C6,
yeah,
they're completely different. Like this one girl I know, she's walking, and she's a C5, C6. So everything's different, and I think you get caught up in trying to compare yourself to another person, like, oh, why are they being able to use a treadmill and I can't do that? Or why are they able to transfer like this, I should be able to do that. So it's kind of just zoning out and just kind of telling yourself that, you know, go at your own speed, don't worry about nobody else, and it's gonna, you know, things are gonna happen, it just takes time. So I just kind of come to terms with that.
Man, those are all good attitudes to have. I mean, those are like some of the same concepts we use like in the coaching world, you know, only to worry about yourself and not to worry about anything, you know, that you have zero control over. Yeah. Especially other people. So I'm glad to hear that you've picked up those coping skills. Tell me about your friendships. Did any of your friendships fray? Did any of them get stronger?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of, I tell other patients that I talk to now, you're going to lose a lot of friends, and it's just, it's normal because you can't, like I said, you can't go out to the bars or you can't go do that like all the time at the beginning. And you're going to lose contact with people, and it's just the way it is. But you're also going to see who really is your friend, because they're going to come visit you. They're going to encourage you to, like, get out. I think it's just part of it. But, you know, you'll really find out, like, who's a real friend and who's not. So,
yeah. Makes sense, man. Tell me, what was it like having to relearn some basic movements, things that we all take for granted?
Oh, it's tough because you don't realize just like trying to pick up a pencil or grab a water bottle, how hard it is, or just trying to eat. It's tough. You know, I had to have special like silverware made to where my fingers go in, so I'm able to eat. I couldn't feed myself for like the first 6 months. Just like your everyday activities that you take for granted, I guess, they become like the hardest thing in the world to like learn back, and it's tough, very, very tough.
All right, well, we're going to transition into the rebuilding process, because one thing that I've noticed is that you don't take things lying down. Like, you're a fighter, you know, and I've kind of kept up with you on social media and, you know, just watched all your gains. I'll start with this, man. Number one, man, you look to be in really good shape. How did fitness become a priority for you?
I think it started before I got, before my accident, actually. I was like a gym freak. I guess it started way back, like after high school. I was in a relationship and, you know, we broke up, whatever. And I started going to the gym, hooping a lot at the YMCA with my buddies. And I kind of started working out, falling in love with it. You know, you start putting on some size, and so you're like, okay, yeah, I like this. And then you just get addicted to going to the gym. And it kind of just becomes like part of your lifestyle. So I was doing that and like realizing that you can still work out, you know, being in a wheelchair, and you just have to adapt and do things certain differently. And I just fell in love with it. I felt like I was actually doing something, and I wasn't just sitting at home, just like my body just slowly dying. And it felt good just to get out and just stay active. And just, I love being active. I can't stay being in bed. It's not me.
Sounds like your dad, right? Always up cleaning shit. And we're actually in your garage right now, and I'm looking at this beautiful weight setup over here, man. So how often do you hit that bad boy?
Honestly, not too much here at the house, just because I work out at the gym a lot.
What gym is that?
Red Zone Training Center.
All right, tell us a little bit about Red Zone, because I hear you work there too now.
Yeah, so it used to be called Apex Houston, which is located off 1960 in Hollister. I think the address is like 6125 Cypress Creek Parkway. And I started training there with a friend of mine that I went to high school with. He would train me. And he actually got a job went started going back to work, so I had to find like somebody else to kind of take a spot. And I met this guy named Gerald up there, which he goes by Red, and started working out with him. And once we started, you know, we've been going strong for like 3 years now, literally. So I think it was like 4 times a week for like the last 3 years.
Damn, dude, this Red sounds like a good guy.
Oh yeah, he's amazing. And at the time, the gym kind of was like slowing down, and he was doing good for himself, so he kind of just bought it out and made it into his own spot. Now he's just like a solo owner of it, and I changed the name to Red Zone from Apex. And now I've been with him so long, he gave me my first job now too, so it's pretty cool.
Damn, Red, that's pretty damn cool, man. Big shout out to Red. Where can people find Red on social media?
If you look him up by Built by Red, it's Built period by period Red. And then if you want to look up the gym on Instagram, it's just redzone.htx. So yeah, their business is good right now for being going through a hard time right now with the COVID and everything. It's actually doing good for us right now, so we can't complain.
Especially, yeah, if you putting in that 40 hours a week, man, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Hey, Red, chill out and give Daniel a day off or two, man.
He tells me, you know, he tells me to take off, but I'd rather be there than be at home, like, doing nothing. So, and I sleep a lot better at night. So.
All right, man. Let me ask you this. When did sports enter the picture? Because I've noticed that you have taken up competitive rugby. Tell me about it.
I think it was about like a year and a half after my injury. I was working out at a 24-hour fitness on, I want to say Kirkendall. It's like Kirkendall, and I forgot the crossroad over there. But I was working out with a friend of mine. He was helping me. Next thing you know, this older man approaches me, and he says, "Hey, have you ever heard of murder ball?"
And what? Said, wait, repeat that.
He says, "Have you ever heard of murder ball?" That's what they used to call wheelchair rugby, like back in the day when it first started. But they had to change the name to wheelchair rugby because it was like, it just didn't sound good.
You may scare people away, man.
That's why they had to change it. So he asked me if I ever heard of it, and I said, "Yeah, they told me about it when I was in the hospital." But I told him, I said, "Like, I'm not playing that shit. Like, you're crazy." And he was like, "No, just come out to a practice and see if you like it." And I was like, "Okay." So my dad was like, "Just try it. If you don't like it, you don't got to do it." So we went out to a practice. I got one of the wheelchairs taped up and everything. And ever since that day, like, I've been back and fell in love with it. And I still do it to this day. And, you know, now our team is ranked 6th in the nation. So for it being all home, like, homebred people, because a lot of teams bring in import players. And
you tell me they got ringers in the game too?
Oh, it's a lot of politics in this game. It's crazy. They even have it in the Paralympics too. So,
What's the name of your organization, or what's the name of the team you play for?
We're the Tier Texans. We're underneath Memorial Hermann Tier Hospital, which is where they do like all the spinal cord injuries, brain injuries, and they're like our biggest funding and everything. So we're underneath them.
You got Memorial Hermann sponsoring y'all?
Yeah, they're our biggest sponsor.
That's pretty damn legit.
We do a lot with them, and they take care of us. So,
well, shout out to Memorial Hermann, man. We appreciate all the good that you do in this world. Y'all put people back together, and y'all help, you know, fund dreams. That's badass.
Literally.
How does playing rugby make you feel on the inside?
Man, it makes me feel great. I got a lot of more confidence from it, strength, just knowledge from a lot of these older guys on my team, because I'm pretty much the youngest one. Everybody on the team has been in a wheelchair for about 20 plus years, so I've learned just different tips and tricks on just how to be independent, and just a lot faster than I think I would be if I never would have met guys like them. A lot of these guys have families already, so they know what it's like. And I've just learned so much from them, build confidence. I think the biggest thing is, like, it's just helped me mentally. And I feel like a lot of it is more mental than physical. Because if you feel like you can't do something and you start putting it in your head, you won't. But now, like, I'm probably more confident in a wheelchair than I was standing up.
Really?
As crazy as it sounds, yeah.
That makes all the goddamn sense in the world, man. Let me ask you about this, too, because I played rugby in college. I want to see if there are any, like, do we share any traditions? Like, when you score your first try, do y'all call them tries in wheelchair rugby?
No, they just call it a goal.
Okay.
Or you get a point.
Well, do y'all Zulu?
Is that, like, the Hawaiian thing?
Wait a minute.
Or is that like...
Zulu is...
it's Australian, right?
Zulu is this. It's when someone scores their first touchdown try in rugby, they get naked.
Oh, no.
And you got to get naked in front of everyone.
No, I'm thinking of, like, you know how they do that dancing in the middle of the field and they're smacking.
Oh, that's a haka.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
Okay, do y'all haka?
No, we don't do nothing like that.
So there's no Zulu. You haven't unclothed yourself in front of your friends in the middle of a bar.
No, you can't.
No. All right, man. Well, we weren't supposed to either, man, but it happens. Is it commonplace to go and share a cold beer after practice or after a game?
I don't want to say after practice just because we practice pretty late from like 6 to 8. And by that time, we practice over there in Midtown off of West Gray.
Golly, that's a drive.
Yeah, so by the time we get out of there, get out of our chairs, everything, it's already like a little bit after 8. And it's on a Thursday night, so a lot of these guys, you know, they got families at home. You know, they're all dads, so... But if we go to, like, a tournament in another city, because we travel usually every month, so usually, like, that's when we'll go out and eat and, you know, they'll have a beer or something like that.
And do y'all sing rugby songs?
I don't even know a rugby song.
Man, we're going to have to teach y'all guys some stuff, man. It makes it makes the experience all the more enjoyable with the little nakedness.
These guys are crazy, though. I can tell you that. There's some crazy people in the wheelchair.
All right, man. Well, tell me about some of y'all's... Give me a tradition that maybe I don't know about that I didn't mention.
I don't want to say there's a tradition because I've never seen a tradition, to be honest, as long as I've been there. Yeah, in all honesty, I've never really seen a tradition or something that we do, like, for a new player. I think the biggest thing is they just give you a hard time.
A lot of
hazing. So you can't take it personal.
Yeah, man. It comes with the territory a little.
Yeah, and a lot of it's... I've learned now, like, you know, I don't give a damn what they say. So I'm just going to keep doing me. And they like to haze a lot, but it is what it is. So...
What's next? What mountain do you wish to climb, you know, after rugby or in addition to rugby? Because you seem like you're ambitious. I imagine there's some other things that you want to check off your bucket list.
Well, I've like fell in love with the game to the point where now, like, I train for it. I work out in my rugby chair. You know, I want to be like the best. They call it low pointer, which is my position. And like, I want to be the best low pointer in the world. And I'm pretty sure I have the potential to do that. I've, you know, got a couple of compliments from other low pointers that are high up there. And they've told me as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm on the right track. So I eventually want to get like an invite to try out for the U.S. Paralympic rugby team. So that's pretty much the goal right now.
Man, well, that shit, that's interesting as hell, man. We ain't never had an Olympian in the family.
So if I can get a tryout, that's all I want. That's all I need. I feel like I can do the rest from there.
Good, man. Well, we hope you get that tryout, man. With everything that's gone on, your parents have had to take on, like, some extra responsibility, you know, like a larger role in your life. If you could, man, please express and share, you know, the love and importance of, you know, your dad. What are some extra things your dad has had to do, you know, just to kind of help you along this journey?
Well, my dad had to quit his job at the time because, you know, I had to have somebody around full time. My mom was still working, but my dad was probably there, like, every day in the hospital. Not that my mom didn't want to do it, she just couldn't because somebody still had to work. So my dad pretty much was just doing everything for me that I needed. You know, we had to remodel the house, put my room downstairs because I had my room on the second floor. And he's pretty much just kind of been like my legs, I guess, in a way. And he's always just pushed me to just, you know, be active, work out, and just to where I am now, I think a lot of it is because of them too. And plus, I have, like, a strong support system with my family, so.
How about your mom's? What are some things that your mom has done? Like what I noticed you mentioned is that, you know, your dad was able to stay here at the house because your mom enabled him to. Your mom probably had to double up on the work and...
Yeah, just double up on the workload and kind of just... I don't want to say like be the man of the house, but... You know, somebody has to, you know,
the breadwinner.
Yeah, somebody has to be the breadwinner, and you know, my dad's not the type of guy to feel insecure like that. And then, you know, he knew he had to help me, and he knew he had to help me, and my mom was just trying to give me everything I needed to stay healthy and just get better and do whatever she needed to do.
Well, man, so. The wonderful thing about a family is that. Like, you can take traditional roles and you can throw them out the window. Like, whenever a family comes together and does what's right, it doesn't matter who wins the bread, right? It doesn't matter who's the caregiver. At the end of the day, the family wins, you know. And I've, like, your dad, Uncle Ray, you know, to me, you know, he's an incredible caregiver. You know, I've witnessed him, everything that he's done. I think that it's incredibly impressive. I actually look up to him in a way, you know, for everything that he's done, you know. And then your mom, you know, she works her ass off. Like, I consider, you know, your mom one of the hardest working people that I know. You know, more times than not, she's at the office.
Yeah.
You know, but she's been able to provide all these wonderful things for y'all. You know, we're sitting here in a beautifully lit and air-conditioned garage.
Yeah.
With a Harley Davidson under a blanket, man. And, you know, probably another motorcycle behind that door, man. You know, so the team, the Ortiz team, you know, has come together and done some wonderful things, man. You're incredibly blessed, and you know that, right?
Yeah.
Is there anyone else that you would like to thank?
Just my therapist, OTs, my PTs, and even just my recreational therapist.
Yeah, drop some names, man. It feels good to call out when people are doing good for you.
I remember a couple of my OTs, but the main one I know is Lisa, Catherine, my PTs, I think it was one named Joelle, and my rec therapist, Emily Young. They, you know, they all work at TIER in the medical center, and they're amazing people. And they've all played a part, and I've had friends too, like my friend Andrew Wynn and my friend Junior. They were the ones that were helping me train. At first, you know, just to kind of get going, and then just my friends in general, that they know who they are, that have like motivated me and really like encouraged me to like come out and still get out the house. And you know, they tell me like we'll help you, whatever you need help with, don't worry about it. And so, you know, those are the ones that are still around today. So yeah, it's a lot of people, and I'm just thankful. It's a process, so.
Yeah,
I appreciate everything they have done for me.
If you could give some advice, you know, to someone that's going through what you went through, or you know, may potentially one day go through, what advice do you have for them going through this experience?
I would say the biggest thing is to don't, like I said earlier, don't try to compare yourself to somebody else, because injuries, even though they might be the same or totally different, you could be walking in a year, you could be running in 2 years. It depends. So don't try to, and like, put a time limit on yourself. It's a slow process, I can tell you that. It takes years, and like I say, just trust the process. And as long as you put in the hard work and everything, it's gonna come. It's gonna come. It might not happen overnight, but it will come. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, you know what, nothing worth doing comes overnight.
Exactly.
Where can people find you on social media and give you a follow?
You can follow me on Instagram. It's CantGuard5. Facebook is Danny Ortiz. I don't really use Facebook.
It's for old people, right?
I just watch
videos. It's for old people. Say it.
I don't say old people, but I watch videos on it. That's about it. So.
And it's for old people.
Maybe. But yeah, I don't really use Facebook. I'm pretty much just on Instagram, and that's about it. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, hey, we appreciate you being here. Again, that's Daniel Ortiz, my cousin. So this is the coach, Chris Ortiz, at the Be Someone podcast. Y'all take care. Go out there and be that someone. Have a blessed day, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is Blue July, and you're listening to the Be Someone podcast. Ooh, la, la. Ooh, la, la, yeah. lights looking bright. The H got the vibe, she's my name on the sign. It's my time to shine when I was cruising 45, and it crossed my mind that I shine like the sun and that I'll be someone.
Lights, camera, fashion, use the flow molasses, blue the line my fashion, future brightening glasses, applause from the masses.
This is the Be Someone Podcast.